This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, real potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar. Look at all this beautiful food.
Guys, welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I interview amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about what is in their fridge. You know, guys, the thing I love about Green Eggs and Dan is that I can open it up to anyone from a wide variety of worlds. We've had water sommeliers, we've had porn stars, we've had actors, athletes, writers, and now, for the first time, we have a world-famous plastic surgeon. Dr. Zubin Gabe is a fancy-pants Beverly Hills surgeon. He's the clinical chief of plastic surgery at Cedars-Sinai. But more important than that, he's my cousin, he's my best friend, and he's one of my favorite people to eat and drink with. Please give a warm Green Eggs and Dan welcome to Dr. Zubin Gabe.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Doctor, it's a pleasure having you here. I have a lot to talk to you about, and a lot of it is about what our dining excursions are like and whatnot, because no one knows me better in the restaurant than you. But first, we need to get to your fridge. You guys can see Zubin's fridge on my Instagram, at StandUpDan. Wow. We might have a contender for best fridge ever on Green Eggs and Dan.
This one is really, it's Tiffany's fridge, but yes. I'm here to represent.
I understand.
I'm here to advocate, and I'm here to go with it.
Tiffany Gabe, if you're listening, my God, can you stock a fridge? This is one of the most pristine fridges I've ever seen. And I come to your house often, so I know that this is not staged.
It's not.
It always just looks like this.
Every day.
Fully, fully stocked. I mean, this is the type of thing that immigrants look at and say, this is the American dream. One day, I want to move to America. I mean, if your ancestors in Iran knew that one day their grand, great, great, great grandchild was going to have a fridge like this, I think, you know, they would have gotten on that boat a lot earlier.
This is why they worked. This is what they dreamed for, and here we are.
So first of all, I want to commend you on your Tupperware. The Tupperware selection. I mean, there's like, this looks like one of those TikTok fridges that are just like made by OCD people. Just like perfectly pristine. Let's start on the top here. We've got, this is like a dairy section. So we've got our yogurt. We've got our Angelo and Franca burrata, which is a very good burrata.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your, I'm going to ding you a little bit for your pre-grated cheeses.
Uh-huh.
What say you?
I say we use so much that, God damn it, we're pre-grating and we're loving every second of it. So, okay. You know, sometimes you got to do what works for your life.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Second row here. Again, more Museum of Tupperware. We've got the egg whites.
Those are eggs. Those are actual eggs.
I'm sorry,
eggs.
These are actual, you know, eggs.
They are the egg whites, but there are yolks inside of it because
they're hard-boiled eggs.
Kind of how they're made.
It's a hard-boiled egg that is white on the outside.
Yeah, but so technically those are egg whites.
All right, so that's a healthy person's thing.
Uh-huh.
You got fancy Vital Farms eggs.
Olives.
You've got, what is this?
Those are beans. Those are,
No, it's not. Cause I was at your house yesterday and it's fake ass pasta.
Fake ass pasta.
I love that you're trying to pass it off. You're trying to pass it off as beans. Uh-huh. No, it is cassava. Oh my God.
It's pasta.
My nona. What would my nona say?
Your nona is rolling right now.
Let's see. Over here we have on the left side, we have some, What is this? This is cherry tomatoes?
Those are cherry tomatoes and Botox.
Oh, that's a Botox.
That's a Botox.
Wow, the Botox.
So, yeah, the night before I Botoxed my sister at home. And here we are, you know.
All right. Well, you know, so much for doctor patient confidentiality.
No. She signed a waiver. It's cool. Don't worry.
She signed a waiver that you could you're allowed to talk.
Just Green Eggs and Dan.
Okay, great.
Yeah. We just hope no one drinks that by accident, because that would be weird.
I mean, it would take all the folds out of your esophagus, yeah. though, which would be nice for peristalsis. Is that what it is?
Just peristalsis. That A is unnecessary.
Peristalsis is the muscular movements of your esophagus to push foods down.
Peristalsis.
Thank you, Johns Hopkins. I knew that $300,000 would not go to waste. Underneath this, so this is fascinating. I don't think I've ever seen this. The bowl within the fridge move of fruit. So there's two bowls of fruit, already serving bowls. And they are full of fruit. One's full of cherries. One is full of peaches. And they are just sitting here to be pulled out.
So, you know, entertaining by itself, it's important to be ready. It's important to be gracious to your guests.
Yes.
But nothing says, fuck you, I can entertain better than anyone, than bringing chilled fruit, because when do you get that?
Wow. So this is to chill. This is a chilled fruit move.
Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you love a chilled cherry rather than just a boring room temperature cherry?
I hate room temperature cherries.
Yeah. See?
These have a crisp to them. They have a crunch.
You're welcome.
All right, below, veggies, crispers are full, everything is, I mean, I'm trying so hard to ding this fridge.
Just come, you're going to find stuff.
I'm having a tough time.
I mean, actually, I know one that you're going to love to hate.
The cassava pasta, I don't know how much worse it can get than that.
It's pretty horrible.
Poor cassava.
For what you want. It works for our purposes.
What do you think that poor cassava...
You know,
who was okay, guys, put me in, coach. I'm ready. What am I going to be made into?
Pasta.
A puree of some sort? Maybe like roast me? No, we're going to turn you into fake pasta. Oh, okay. Is this the bread section? Tortillas and breads?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Some naans. Some Trader Joe naans.
Some naans.
I don't know what the plural of naan is.
Naan-nai. I'm going into the door now. We got the Museum of Kerrygold. Everyone's got the Kerrygold Museum up top. You've got the probiotics for the kids. Kid probiotics.
Yeah, I don't really ever see them drink it, but you know, it's there because maybe one day.
Yeah. We've got clover milk, actually, is probably my favorite frothing milk.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's very frothable.
It's a good frothy milk. You've got chocolate syrup, maple syrup. I mean, you guys fucking have everything. What is this? Another probiotic?
Kavita is, it's a kombucha light kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean.
But here, so you know what? I'm going to take you top drawer.
Here.
All the way to the end over there.
In the door,
top
drawer.
I'm going to bring your pet peeve. There it is.
Dana Dude's pet peeve, organic ketchup.
Yep, non-Heinz. Wow. Non-Heinz. And listen, I'm with you on this one, actually.
Yeah.
Tiff, sorry.
Yeah, also another one I'm going to ding you on is fucking sriracha.
No.
The probiotic sriracha.
No, because today we have to pay $70 a bottle for the real sriracha.
Oh, is it more expensive?
Yeah, there's a sriracha shortage. Where
is
have you
it
been?
Still the sriracha shortage?
I don't know.
Shortage?
I'm just saying this to justify us having that.
No.
Because that was there probably for like a year.
The shortage is done. Okay, we've solved the chili bottleneck has been cleared up. There's no excuse for fake ass probiotic sriracha.
Sure, but I'll tell you what. Let's look at this in a positive light.
Okay.
Because we are condiment optimists here.
Coptimists. Yeah.
Sure. We try a lot. We don't like a lot. Because honestly, that probiotic sriracha tastes like shit.
Yeah.
I would not recommend it.
By the way, they're one of our sponsors. Just
sure.
So you know.
Thank you for that horrible thing. But we tried it and we're optimists.
Yeah.
And we just haven't thrown it away because we have to fill something else.
I understand. I get it. Let's go to the freezer. Again, I'm trying so hard to find awful things. You got the organic homestyle waffles. It's funny. My last guest, Erica Rhodes, Erica Rhodes and I were talking about Eggos.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I would put Eggos in that same category of you want the Eggo instead of the organic, newfangled version.
You know what? I'm a big supporter of your sometimes you got to go with the original shit thing.
Yeah.
I actually think waffles is not one of them. I think if you actually eat an Eggo right now,
yeah,
because there's a lot of nostalgia with it, which is awesome.
Yes.
But they actually kind of taste like shit. And these home-style organic-y
Stop,
ones...
Stop, this is the third time you've said shit on my food podcast.
Mm.
People don't want to hear about that. Come up with a better adjective. Cardboard. Yeah. Styrofoam.
No, so they taste, I think, very much like nothing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of taste to this. The organic home-style waffles have a little bit more oomph to them. There's a little more wheat, a little more fiber kind of texture to it that I think goes down right.
Interesting. Okay.
We are sponsored by Sprouts, by the way.
Yeah, apparently.
They're organic waffles.
Sprouts. The Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah, so, okay. You know, that's the original, and, you know, you can't beat that. That's a really good one.
This is the Haagen-Dazs on a stick,
mm-hmm.
with the vanilla, with the chocolate icing on the outside. Yeah. That is, it's a perfect food.
Mm-hmm.
It is
Prefer the dark chocolate over the milk chocolate.
Yeah, same.
So, Tiff, take note.
Thanks. That's an age thing. That's an age thing.
Yeah.
The older we get, the darker we want our chocolate. That's not a metaphor for anything. Okay, so you got the sweet potatoes. I guess a lot of this is kids.
That's
stuff.
For the air fryer.
Yeah, you got the French
fries. You know, it works.
Yeah.
Dr. Prager's patties and stuff, you know.
This is fun. Organic mangoes frozen. Yeah. Is this for like smoothies and shit?
Yeah. Yeah, and then sometimes just as a snack.
Wow, this is a lot of good smoothie stuff here.
Yeah.
You got the berries, the fucking... I'm telling you, this is an aspirational fridge.
Thank you.
You got the Haagen-Dazs ice cream. Again, OG.
Yeah.
I think there's nothing better than, you know, where we all try our fun, fancy Jenny's and our this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Show me one ice cream that's better than Haagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. I dare you.
There's not.
There's absolutely not.
Now, the funny thing is, though, that this is... This is the primary fridge, and we don't need to go into the other one, but...
What a flex.
I know. I just want to...
I wasn't even going to point it out, but yes, this
was my ancestors.
Primary.
This was for the ancestors. You know, the ancestors not only wanted a perfectly stocked fridge, but the ones who really were working hard wanted their kids to have a second one, and here we are. Solomon Gabe, you're welcome. Thank you for your heritage.
Jubin is running for Senate, apparently. When I grew up, we had one refrigerator in our home.
I don't know if we need to talk about it.
You know, we got the backup fridges here.
Right, the backup fridge is like the shit show.
Although
this is really good. It is fun. It's really where my wife goes crazy supporting her children with every ice cream you can find.
Yeah, like there's Twix
and sandwiches and...
Yeah. You know what my favorite ice cream sandwich is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Chipwich?
Yeah.
That,
oh my God.
Ugh.
It was so good.
The Chipwich.
Well, although actually, there's one that's better, and I don't know, this might be a West Coast, East Coast thing. There was something called It's It. So the Chipwich was a very sort of standard... Chocolate chip cookie, ice cream, chocolate chip cookie, but dense.
Oh, you're forgetting the most important part.
The chocolate chips on the side.
On
yeah,
the outside.
That was fantastic.
That was a textural tour de force.
So it was a fake oatmeal cookie that wasn't super oatmeal-y because oatmeal cookies kind of suck.
Yeah.
With also a dense ice cream, but it was dipped in chocolate.
Okay.
And it was just, there was something so delicious and sharp and crisp and dense about it that I think it superseded. I think it was better than the Chipwich.
Were you guys a Choco Taco people on the West Coast? I would assume with all the Mexican influences... that the Choco Taco would have made it here.
No, we actually went for original tacos with, chocolate.
You just dip chocolate sauce on your tacos?
We didn't get it at the supermarket. We went to the Choco Taco stand. No, we never did Choco Taco. Sorry.
Okay, so you and I probably go out and eat more than anyone I know.
Mm-hmm.
We are kindred spirits in the food and mm-hmm. beverage space.
Mm-hmm.
I always like to say, use the of mice and men thing of George and Lenny. When you and I go out, we're like two Lennies.
Okay, thanks.
We'd have no stopping. There's no limit on what we do.
There's no frontal lobe. Got it. No, we don't stop.
It's just time to tend the rabbits. And that's it. I'm forgetting what it was, but last time we had dinner at Wally's and you said something to me which enraged me so much that I said, I need to bring you on the podcast and we need to talk about it. Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, of course. It was not writing the order on the paper.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. Your number one pet peeve.
My number one pet peeve. Probably top five for sure of the server not writing down the order. Worst thing you can do in a restaurant because, again, even if they get it right, we've had anxiety the whole time to see if we're going to get it right. You told me that I was overreacting.
So I don't think you're overreacting, but I think this just goes to show what a better person I am than you.
Wow.
Okay. Because you're profoundly pessimistic to think they're going to fuck up the order.
Okay.
And for me, I look at it as an optimist and I say, oh my God, the guy's going to do it. Take the order. This is going to work. This is a professional. And you know, I think it speaks to my optimism and my excitement about the experience of dining. I want to always have a great dining experience. And if someone does this part of a show to show me how professional and talented and caring they are in my order, yeah. But if they fuck it up, then it's not good. And then I'm going to let them know.
I'll tell you why you're absolutely wrong. So you just basically want to be entertained by a dumb party trick so that in the middle of this meal, what if they just brought out juggling balls? And they're like, oh, in the meantime, while you wait for your food, I'm going to juggle. Like,
Let me tell you why you're wrong.
Hold on. You're looking at it like you're like a Roman emperor, and you want the court jesters to entertain you with your brain teasers. Nah, I have faith in this server. Yes. Impress me.
So you and I had a very similar experience at Emeril's restaurant in New Orleans. Okay. One of the most exciting things that happened to me in my young dining life, I was with a group of 10 or 15, like early 20-year-old guys. We were at Jazz Fest in New Orleans. We went to Emeril's restaurant, which at the time, Emeril was the TV cook that was very like bam and just kind of obnoxious and everything. But like you dig down there and you realize, no, the guy is all about service and an incredible product and an incredible experience. Yeah. And for me, and I think I talked to you about this, you know, we go to the restaurant, we put in this huge order. Imagine all these idiots coming in and ordering something and you'd think you'd be treated like crap, but no, they were super on top of everything. They were super, you know, on it. And then when they delivered the dishes to the table, they did that thing where if there were 10 people, 5 waiters, each with 2 plates on their hands, swept in and just all at once, whoosh, presented it to everyone. And we're all just like, oh my God, what just happened here?
I just got a tingle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I want that tingle. I'm chasing the tingle.
We're always all chasing.
I want to go to McDonald's and get the goddamn tingle.
We're all chasing the tingle. I just don't see how that dumb memorization of that is such a micro tingle.
But don't you think when we were at Wally's when this happened, Wally's is like a nice wine bar restaurant in Beverly Hills.
It's where cougars go to feed.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is where
it is.
Feeding time for cougars.
They cougars descend. Everywhere.
There's a dinner bell for cougars. They ring it and they all just come into Wally's. That's where they go.
So we go and, you know, the waitress starts taking our order and she was supremely confident.
Yes.
She looked really like she knew what she did. And importantly, this was something that she wasn't just doing as a side gig, or if she was, she took it seriously.
Yes.
And she started taking our order or asking for our order and didn't write anything.
And I said, oh.
You said,
You're going to do, I said, you're going to do the old memorization, huh?
And she's like, let me ask you, did she get it right?
She did get it right.
And didn't it feel good? It felt good to me.
Not in the meantime.
I got a little... Yeah,
not in
but
the meantime,
you ruined
I was
it.
Quaking.
You ruined any chance for a fucking tingle.
I was quaking.
You're a defeatist. You're a tingle defeatist.
You know, maybe it's a control thing. Maybe I can't let go.
I actually think that's
this is turning
thing,
into therapy.
So tell me about your childhood.
Show me
which I know exactly where this is coming from. But I think it was that. Just I like that. And I want them to get it right.
You like the pomp. You like the circumstance.
I do.
Well, then that brings me to my next point.
Let's go.
You and I are diametrically opposed on a very famous, certain stake, rabble-rousing circus monkey.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. By the name of Salt Bae.
Okay.
I am pro-Salt Bae.
Here's your shtick.
You are anti-Salt Bae. And I am pro-Salt Bae for the exact same reasons that you are pro-memorizing the bill. I know that I'm not there for the best steak. I know that I'm not there to have a life-altering experience with food, but sometimes it's enough with the life-altering food experiences. I want a show. And what better show than Salt Bae throwing salt willy-nilly, clapping, putting gold leaf, fires coming on, and me going into bankruptcy when the bill shows up.
You know what? I can appreciate that. I mean, the guy's just on a cash grab. He opened up 48 restaurants in the world and just like stays there for 5 minutes at each one, takes everyone's money, and then it's just like a deserted shell of what it is, where some, you know, poor schmuck from Glendale is sitting there sprinkling your salt on your $1,000 steak.
Yeah.
Here's a good one. Okay, Salt Bae is a personality sprinkling your steak. Fine, interesting. Like, it's his thing. Everyone's got a thing. But what about this loser from Glendale? Glendale, I love you. Everything is fine. But what if some other guy is sprinkling it on?
Yeah, the understudy.
Is it as fun?
What you're saying to me is you don't want a random Armenian.
I didn't say that.
It was implied.
I love my Armenian friends.
I love your Armenian friends so much that I want the Armenian to sprinkle my steak salt.
That's fair.
No, I'm actually, push come to shove, I have kind of changed my tune on Salt Bae.
Now, legit question, because you've been saying this for probably the better part of 2 years now. Is it a shtick or were you genuinely in? Let's go for the real answer.
I swear to God, I was genuinely in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And then I slowly started to lose my love for him.
You know what? At the beginning, it was exciting. I mean, he legit was a personality. He was a viral personality.
Yes.
He was, you know, fun.
He was the first TikTok famous restaurateur.
Yeah.
The guy took TikTok videos and started an empire.
Yeah.
There's something kind of impressive about
that. I can see that.
I
think what happened, though, is like you start really looking into him.
Yeah.
And you realize, kind of gross.
Yeah, the emperor wears no salt.
No.
Salt. And the funny thing is, every time we walk by his restaurant, to your favorite restaurant, which is Spago, there's no one in there.
At Salt Bae.
There's no one
Spago.
In Salt Bae.
No,
Bae's
never.
Place. There's like four Saudis who are visiting, and that's it.
Yeah.
It's I don't know how they pay the rent. It's unbelievable.
I think it's some sort of money laundering scheme.
It's Turkish mafia.
For sure.
For sure it's
Absolutely.
Turkish mafia.
We love the Turkish mafia.
We love the Turkish
you're
mafia.
You're the best mafia.
We love all the
mafias. You're not illegal.
Everything is
fine.
No, we love all the mafias. Yes. Turkish, Italian, Swedish house mafia.
Yeah. Oh, they're good. They're really
they're
good.
Great
the beat,
too.
It's fantastic.
We love them all. So, look, I guess my question to you is this. For someone who's eaten with me more than anyone else, is it A, fun to eat with me? B, infuriating to eat with me, or C, a little bit of both?
D, yes, just all of them.
All of it.
And I think that's part of the Dana Dude experience. You know, you go in for the whole, you go in for the highs, you go in for the lows, you go in for the abuse, you go in for the fun. There is the stuff that you do that is fucking infuriating. And everyone talks about that. And I feel like, again, that has almost become your shtick and you push that because both out of personal enjoyment of your own neuroses, but also getting a rise out of other people, which I can appreciate.
Yes, yes.
And then, you know, the fun times, the good times and everything. It goes back to, why do we go out? Dinner is an experience.
Yes.
It's the food. It's the pomp and circumstance. It's the conversation. And I think you and I have ground that down enough that now we can do it. And, you know, we get a consistent product every time
we
go out.
Yes, we know it's going to be an adventure. We leave our cars at home.
Yeah.
And we know it's going to lead to adventure.
Yes.
It's funny. One of my Dana Dude-isms I did the other day at a restaurant. I was with Matt Katz. And we were at a restaurant in New York, and the bartender goes, It was before we order anything. He goes, questions, comments, concerns? I was like, I'm going to give you one of each. My question is, and then I started doing this thing, this whole shtick.
Uh-huh.
And the guy was kind of looking, and I couldn't really tell if he was liking it or not. And then he like walked away to go do something. And I was like, I looked at Matt. I was like, I think I'm really annoying to people. And he was like, no, no, I think they like it. I was like, I don't know. I think I might be a piece of shit.
I'm gonna sort of give you an answer to this that I don't think you expect.
Okay.
This is a pre-dad joke.
Yes.
You know, it's the same thing. And at its root, and I'm sorry, funny enough, I think I learned dad jokes from my mom.
Pre-transition.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
It's okay.
It's my favorite lady in the world.
Dad jokes are more for the joker's amusement than anyone else.
Ah, yeah.
And you get a kick out of that shtick.
I do.
And most of the people around you, some of even when they say they don't like it, there's an enjoyment there.
Yeah.
And it's the poor waiter, man. That guy. You know, that's a 50-50. But you carry it with enough charm that you most of the time can get some sort of good response.
There is a server at my favorite restaurant, Marvin, who absolutely abhors me. He hates me.
Yeah.
And so I need to check that he's not working there.
Again, we all have our rituals with eating, and sometimes it's just making sure the person that doesn't want to or who wants to kill you is not there.
You know, it's one of those things where I do a lot of bits. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of bits, and sometimes they work.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't. And when they don't, you know, I put it all out there. I put my heart out there, my heart and soul.
But, you know, this is an interesting thing about the humanity of eating out. You know, what if you go to, like, restaurants? I feel like everyone thinks every time you go to a restaurant, it has to be the same experience over and over, consistently, perfectly. And this is sort of the Michelin starization of restaurants or the Yelpization of restaurants, where everything that they do is reported to the world.
Yeah.
And you want a consistency there that happens. But your point is very interesting. Listen, what if you go to a restaurant and you just have a shit experience with the person who is serving you and helping you? It's a partnership when you go out to dinner. Mm-hmm. It's a partnership between you and the whole restaurant staff. And sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just have a bad experience.
Yeah.
And it's part of, again, the humanity of it. We're not all perfect. And it's interesting. Then does that mean you never go again? And I think your thing with this favorite restaurant of yours is you do go again. And when you don't interact with that one person,
yeah,
it's delightful.
It is. It's my favorite restaurant. But, you know, there's nothing like having a dark cloud in the restaurant knowing that he wants to murder you. You had a party at your home once, which was like you invited all your work people. You invited a bunch of people that you did work on. It was sort of, I don't remember what the party was, but it was like a something for the
office.
It was
just summer.
Yeah. It was like a big party, though. Yeah. And you had a ice luge. An ice luge where you would pour like tequila into, it was a bust of a woman, and the tequila would come out of the nipple. So you'd suck on the nipple.
Okay, so listen.
It was the best. It was the most Beverly Hills plastic surgeon thing ever.
This was there were two. It was the pre-COVID one was a little sucking out, and it was kind of gross. And then post-COVID was into a shot glass.
Yes,
it was Venus de Milo. So let's keep it classy.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
and listen, you gotta have fun with your job.
That was very fun.
Thank you.
Was very on the nose. Very fun.
Actually,
it was on the boob, yeah. On the areola,
yeah.
If you will. Guys, I have egg on my face, specifically hot sauce free egg on my face, because apparently the sriracha shortage is still going strong and it's in its second year. Zubin was right, I was wrong. Hui Fong, the maker of the world's most popular sriracha, can't get their shit together and people are paying 5 times more for the stuff on eBay. Even Walmart is price gouging, selling 2 17-ounce bottles of sriracha for $80. Well, other hot sauce companies are rushing to fill the void, and the best troll by far is being done by Tabasco. They make their version of sriracha, and they're being sold on the website, here it is, srirachashortage.com. I have no idea how good the hot sauce is, but that web address is pretty spicy. Oh, yeah! Sorry, my bad. Okay, I'm going to get to the questions that I ask everyone towards the middle of the pod.
All right,
starting with, what is your earliest food memory?
So we as a family originate in Iran. I am from Iran. You're not. So
yeah, you're
guys,
born there.
Sorry, I can't be your president. I was 4 when I left. And, you know, it's funny. This is such a great memory for me, actually. I remember being in the park on like a It was a chilly day.
In Iran or
in Iran?
Okay.
And there was this guy selling corn. And it was, you know, it was like a full-on grill that he barbecued the corn on. So it was like roasted and, you know, charred and everything. And then he took it and dipped it into a big bucket of salt water,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Persian balal. And he gave it to you. And I remember getting that thing. And like, this thing was just beautiful. And I think I remember the smell more than even the taste.
Yeah.
But it was just so vivid and it was so beautiful and so organic and everything that was it. That was the first one. You know, it's funny, these memories you put in your head, and I'm sure it's from somewhere, but then you build it over your lifetime.
Yeah.
But I really, that memory, I think, has stayed fairly consistent with me. It's great.
That's very cool. And that's also a very cool style. The way that Persians do corn is very interesting to me. The saltwater dip.
It's so good.
Is it typically the saltwater? So grill it over charcoals, then into saltwater?
Yeah.
Or is it the other way around? Was it like...
I think it's after the grill.
I think you're right.
Because if you dip it and then grill it, you're going to lose everything, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
In my memory, it was afterwards. And please don't destroy my memory. It's beautiful, even if it's wrong.
I won't. Okay, that's good. So now your death row meal. Let's see. Let's think of a good reason that you're on death row. You and I are at a restaurant together, and the server decides I'm not going to take the notes, and you say, "Hey, Dan, just relax into it." And I'm like, "Okay, buddy." Order comes completely wrong. I start laughing so hard at you. You can't take it anymore. You pull out a syringe. And you just start going at me. And it's a very thin syringe, so it takes a long time for you to stab me to death. And why I don't move out of the way, I don't know. Because it's Botox, and I'm frozen.
Paralyzed
you,
right?
I'm frozen.
Yeah, even though it takes a week, but that's fine.
So now you're on death row. What is your death row meal?
So, you know, it's funny. I have the meal. There are a couple of things there. It's funny. One of your last or recent people you spoke with said this. I didn't think about this, but she said, "It's one of my mom's dishes, but I don't want my mom to cook it because it's going to be so distressing to her."
Yes.
Which really made me feel like an asshole for what I'm going to say, because for sure I want my mom's dish. So let's take my mom out of the equation and pretend it's mom in a vacuum, because I don't want her to suffer. I love my mom.
By the way, mom in a vacuum, perfect Christmas present. You guys are going to love them. They're coming out. All right. Mom in a
vacuum.
Pre-order
on Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay, so her gorma sabzi is, I think, the perfect death row meal. And gorma sabzi is a stew of multiple herbs, and it's very sort of fragrant and strong and powerful, often with kidney beans and some sort of meat product. And the way my mom braises her meat in this is unreal, usually over some rice.
And limon mani and dried limes.
Oh, fantastic. So it in every way is a complete meal. And in the more traditional way of doing it, which my mom doesn't always do, they put fenugreek in it. So you literally sweat this dish out for a week after you eat it. It's pretty freaking intense. So I would want that. But
are you going fenugreek on death row or no?
Yeah.
Oh, you're going all the way.
Dude, it doesn't matter anymore.
Smell up the whole prison.
Oh, no. Let me tell you, this is part two of this thing, because I thought about this, that I don't want to just have a death row meal. I want vengeance.
Oh.
I want vindication.
Yeah.
The way I would do it is I would eat so much.
Yeah.
So much. I would fill every single bit of my intestinal tract
yes.
with this food so that
yeah.
when they fry me,
yeah.
when they give me the lethal injection, whatever, I don't like where this is going. Oh, I am exploding in that chamber. And they're going to have to clean that up.
Food podcast.
You know what? No.
First of all, you know why this is very, very disrespectful?
Tell me.
You murdered me. So my whole family is going to be there watching you shitting your brains out.
You start with one. You go through the whole damn generation. Through everyone.
Your aunt is going to be there.
You know what? Sometimes you make a decision, you got to stick with it. Even if it's the wrong one.
Can I tell you something? Your mother, Nahid, is probably, objectively, the best cook in the family.
I don't disagree.
I don't think you disagree. I don't think any of the cooks in our family disagree either. In fact, it's funny. Her family is known for being a foodie family. Mm-hmm. The men cook mm-hmm. as much as the women, which in Persian culture you do not see very often.
Yeah.
But you have uncles and cousins who are the Simantov family, who are insane cooks.
Absolutely.
And your mom is A number one. But when you said your mom's hormus sabzi, I know your mom's oeuvre of cooking.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I just thought of it while you were saying it. One of my earliest food memories is something that your mom cooked for me. It was a rosemary chicken.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It was that her legendary rosemary chicken. And I'd never had punch you in the face rosemary flavor before. And I was like, this. And because we would come to LA when we were kids and, you know, we'd all hang together.
Yeah.
And that dish. Oh, yeah. It's bringing me to tears right now.
It's incredible. And it's completely, that was something that, you know, at our house, we just had a lot of rosemary.
Yeah.
So she just was like, okay, let's put this together. I mean, no recipe, nothing. Her ability to spontaneously come up with something based on just what's around.
Yeah.
It was so influential to me, both in terms of how I like to cook and how I like to think about food in the kitchen, but also just, I swear, it's funny you say this, I'm thinking about it now, but it in terms of stimulating creativity in my mind.
Yeah. Well, she's very, she has a very Italian approach to cooking, even Persian foods, where she just takes what's around there and throws it in.
And what's good.
Yeah.
And what's right and what's simple. She does not go crazy with things. Yeah.
Thanks. So, but here's what where I was getting at is she's got all these greatest hits. She's got her rosemary chicken. She's got her saffron chicken.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, if I had to go out with one of Nahid's death row meals, it would be the osobuco.
Interesting.
Nahid makes an osobuco, which is basically a braised veal shank that she makes, which again, not very woke to be braising the veal.
No.
But man, she does it.
She does the shank and the shoulder, arguably one better than the other.
Unapologetically, she does it. She puts it on the table.
Oh, yeah.
When
fuck
we have
that baby cow.
We have vegan family members. She doesn't care. And it's, I mean, it is, it looks like the animal, the big bone and everything. And that to me, her osobuco is something, it's pretty legendary.
So let's think about why you're on death row, Dan, since you're going, no. But it's funny, it's a tough question. And legit, I was thinking about this. I feel like the gut for me is just going to that hormus sabzi. There's a, it's funny, everyone who talks about this, somehow there's a return to childhood. There's a comfort food aspect of their last meal.
Yes.
And I think for me, that's it.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I highly approve. Best high-end meal you've ever had.
Are you ready?
Yes.
You know what it is.
Which one?
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
So.
I just remember the best story ever.
There are so many parts of this story.
Tarof's gone wrong.
So in 2010, Tiff and I got married. Blissful life. Everything was fantastic. We were excited. We had friends supporting us and all that stuff. And one of our great first trips after getting married was to New York in the middle of, I think it was like January, February. It was cold. It was snowing, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dan very kindly arranged for us to have dinner at Blue Hill at Stone Barns. So this is a magical restaurant that is in a farm in Westchester County that the farm used to, if I remember correctly, belong to the Roosevelt family? Rockefeller family, excuse me. And it's where they would get their milk produced and shipped daily to the city. So after time, it was lent to a foundation or was given to a foundation where the whole thing is you produce all the food and you make all of the food. Everything in the restaurant was from the farm.
Yes.
So, you know, lots of agriculture techniques and all that stuff. So we go to this restaurant.
Yes. So for let me just take us all back here.
So I'm ready to throw myself under the bus.
I feel like I was very influential in the beginning, courtship and dating.
Very.
With, you know, Tiffany, and mm-hmm. we went on triple dates a lot. I was third wheel. We have so much fun together. And so you guys were like, we want to go to the great restaurant. I was like, I got you. Yeah. You guys got to go to Blue Hill. Mm-hmm. This was also when Danadute was not making that much money, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't going to go, but I was happy to make the reservation. So I made the reservation, and then Jube calls me, and he says, make the reservation.
I got you.
For three.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you mean? He's like, we want you to come. I was like, wait, really? And you're like, yeah, we would love for you to come. I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. Because this is like a $250 a person thing back then, which, you know, and I was like, I was so excited that I get to experience this. So then they get to New York. We are on our way up there.
Took the train up there. We somehow got to the restaurant. It was this beautiful winter night.
I remember exactly how we got to the restaurant because this uh-huh. is where it happened. We were taking a taxi from the train station to the restaurant.
Didn't it happen when the bill came?
No.
Oh, I'm such an asshole.
No.
But listen, okay, go with it.
In the taxi, I said, so first of all, you need to know there's a concept in Farsi called taaruf, which is when you kind of politely say you'll do something that you don't really want to do. Like, oh, you can stay at my place for as long as you want. Like, you know, and people don't normally take you up on it. They'll be like, no, thank you. It's sort of this like polite game of chicken mm-hmm. that Persians play. Mm-hmm. And so me, taarufing, I just said, dude, are you sure you want to pay for me? Like, I can cover myself. Totally didn't mean it. And right away, this fucker goes, cool, thank you. Yeah, no, that's great. Okay, cool. And I was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So now we're fucking having this four-hour dinner where I'm like thinking in my head of what kind of budgetary cuts I'm going to have to make for the next 6 months to pay for this goddamn meal. Mm-hmm. Jube's excited because now because mm-hmm. he just saved $500.
Okay, it was 300, first of all.
With but wine.
I apologize. I apologize then. I apologize now. I cringe at this moment of my life to this day. And actually, despite that incredible, horrible thing that I did, which, mind you, I was still a resident at that point, making like no money. So yeah. I overextended myself and I feel like a complete jerk doing it. So again, I'm sorry, as I apologized a million times since.
Yes.
But the funny thing is that despite this horrible pock on this event, it still is the best high-end meal I've ever had.
Yeah.
And let's talk about why. So there were so many incredible little things that I think the highlights for me, funny enough, one was they start with the appetizers. And one of the appetizers was literally a piece of wood with a bunch of nails hammered through the wood and just root vegetables on each of those nails. And yeah. there was just like this little tiny red carrot.
Yeah, tiny baby root vegetables.
Oh my
yeah.
God. It was one of the most unreal things I've ever had. I mean, we had a pickled venison heart that was so beautiful.
That's right.
And you know, I mean, we had so much incredible booze also that that Will set for us.
Will Nazar
yeah.
is now the CFO of Major Food Group, Carbone, Teresi, all those places. He was a little scrub assistant sommelier.
Yeah.
And he was the nicest boy.
Oh, my God.
And now he's literally fucking runs Miami. Yeah.
So, Will, thank you. It still is memorable. All of the wine we had. I mean, yes. I think we had like five bottles between the three of us. I'm serious. Like, we were all going to die that
we
night.
We drank a ton of wine.
That, by far, was the best high-end food experience I've had, and certainly both you and I together and independently have had some pretty incredible ones.
Yeah, no, that was great. I mean, it was a bummer that I had to move back in with my parents uh-huh. after that meal.
It's okay. So it was worth it for but, this moment yeah,
it together. Gave me discipline. What's the best low-end meal you've ever had?
See, it's funny. I was thinking about this, and this great experience came to mind. So at the end of medical school, I went with a bunch of my classmates to India. theoretically for a medical elective, mm-hmm. but really I went with this group of people to act as mules for our friend Rakesh Agarwal. He was getting married in DC and he needed us all to just bring stuff back from India. So, you know, the first phase of the trip, we were walking around the country getting all sorts of stuff. And then his family basically gave us their bodyguard to tour us around the country. And this guy did a very grassroots tour. I mean, like tiny little cities and all this stuff. So we were somewhere in the middle of nowhere in this little town where we stopped one day, and a couple of us were hungry. So he's like, "Okay, come with me." He took us to this literal just a dirt lot somewhere where they had a tandoori oven, and they made us this tandoori chicken that they served on newspaper.
Okay,
and I mean. I don't know which was better, the actual taste or the experience, but it was just like exactly what you wanted in the middle of nowhere India. So it was this perfect chicken, perfectly cooked, straight out of the oven on a piece of newspaper.
Wow.
And it was just perfection.
Tandoori chicken on a newspaper.
Yeah.
That's the first time we've gotten that for sure. Favorite drunk food? I think I know what it is.
What's your guess?
My guess is something Mexican, because we've had a lot of drunk Mexican food, specifically that restaurant on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Los Tacos,
yes,
right?
Yes, Los Tacos.
Yeah.
That's old school. That was very fun. We'd always stumble in there.
Yeah.
And it was very satisfying.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I think because now whenever we're drinking, we're not going out one of these places, but still... There are two things that I think speak to me, and it's definitely a part of my past. It is some sort of Southern California-based Mexican food.
Okay,
so not any of the big NorCal stupid burritos or whatever. Either like an L.A. version of a taco or something like that, or actually in college I was in San Diego, and the San Diego Roberto's burrito, another fantastic one. Like that was just a carne asada burrito. Mm-hmm. Those are great. But also, you know, it's funny, I just think about everything academically, I guess, but I went to med school in Virginia, as you know, and in Virginia, it was all about the diner food.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I can't tell you how many chicken fried steaks saved my life after a night of drinking.
Chicken fried steak
is a surprisingly good drunk food.
Still don't know why they can't just call it fried steak. Why do they have to bring up that it's the style of frying that they do to chicken?
There's a story in it.
There's got to be a story.
It adds to the excitement.
What about next day? Hangover cure?
At the most basic level, just a breakfast burrito is fantastic. Yeah. You know, it can't go
wrong. So burrito at night and burrito in the morning. Mm-hmm. La Dor Va Dor.
Now, sometimes in the morning, topping that thing off with a nice IV, a Myers cocktail... You know, if we can get a little medical, it really helps.
You just reminded me of the craziest moment that you and I ever had. It's not really that food related, but I was in LA. I had a show in Bakersfield. And I was in LA. I had this show the next night in Bakersfield. The night before, I went out drinking so hard. I had so much alcohol. I woke up. I was so sick. And it was as if I had food poisoning, but it was just alcohol poisoning or whatever it was. And I had a show that night, and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this show. I don't know. I can't drive there. I don't know what I'm going to do. And you were like, I'll drive you there, and I'm going to give you an IV in the car. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, don't worry. We'll do this. And you hung an IV from the rearview mirror, put the IV in me, drove me to my show. I did the show, and we drove back. One of the nicest things you've ever done for me in my life.
I think we're even for that meal, aren't we?
I think we are.
There we go. We just came full circle.
Favorite celebrity food personality? And I'm starting to ask this question and say favorite celebrity food personality besides Anthony Bourdain.
Because you just want everyone to say Dana, dude.
I mean, if it's just between me and Anthony Bourdain... Which we are in rarefied air.
I mean, you're pretty much the same person. You are my favorite because of all the experiences, because we know each other, because I know the stupidity that's in your brain when you're doing things. So it makes it fun and personal.
Okay, that's very nice.
And you know, and the things that you've done in this world. I mean, I think you're your approach to food and comedy and life is so refreshing and fun. So for sure that, and I say that both as a as an invested relative, but also as just an objective viewer.
Wow. Uh-huh. All right. Venmo at Gabe is coming.
But fuck you, Anthony Bourdain, also. I can't, because it's funny, he was so influential in my understanding of food and travel and just sort of the personal experience. So, you know, it's funny, everyone says Anthony Bourdain, and I've thought about this in the context of your podcast so much that I was like, I don't want to be the guy that says it, but he was truly one of the most influential people in how I consume life. And has shaped me when I travel. When I go to different countries now, I look for the little shithole spot that's just like, that makes something no one else can, that does it beautifully. I enjoy all of these experiences that he taught me how to enjoy. So he was the right person at the right time in life for me. And very much with Tiff, I think we started really watching him right when we got married, and it set the tone for how we do so many things. So
I love that.
I have to say him.
That's okay. That was a good spirited defense. Mm-hmm. From now on, whoever's on the pod, if you're going to say Bourdain, you need to have that
defend
type of defense.
It. Absolutely.
You can't just say, I don't know, I guess Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah. What about, so it's funny because the other one that I think is interesting is, what about Guy Fieri? Because now people are using Guy Fieri in almost the same sort of deferential tone as, oh, he's such a nice guy and he was misunderstood and he's this and that. And I love it. I actually love that he's becoming now people's favorite thing. But you're going to get to the point where you're not going to allow him either.
No, I'm okay with Guy Fieri. I think it's Guy Fieri and Anthony Bourdain are two of the most different people, but I think two sides of the same coin.
They
in a way.
Humanized food.
Yeah, but Anthony Bourdain is
Anthony Bourdain brought it from up to down. He brought something elevated and rarefied down to the masses.
Okay.
And Guy Fieri brings this thing that people consider the bottom, just crap, and elevates it to the masses.
You're welcome. Thank you. I was just trying to say, like, he's Guy Fieri's Walmart, but I like your version's better. I do think he does elevate low-brow food, and Bourdain equalizes highbrow.
I love
or
that.
Brings the highbrow down.
And you know, I want to actually say one more thing that I think is something that was always influential to me, or just it was so enjoyable to me. And I love that you have this YouTube channel now that follows it. But you remember the show we talked about, this Great Chefs. So in the, I want to say like maybe what, early 80s or late 80s, early 90s, there was a series of shows that would go to these really fancy restaurants and they would just watch one of these great chefs make a signature dish.
Yeah, it was a fucking great show.
Oh,
it
my
was
God.
PBS.
I think so.
Yeah, it was PBS. And they would do the voiceover because most
of
the time.
It was a Southern woman. That, yes. Right? It was a Southern woman. Maybe it was Paula Deen. Who knows?
It was her first job. Yeah. And
so that was another great, like, it's not a food personality, but I also love that you're following these shows now and you're doing that YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah. The Vintage Roast, where we look at old cooking shows and roast them.
The show is sponsored by Vintage Roast.
So it is sponsored by The Vintage Roast on YouTube. Desert Island Food. You're on a desert island.
Yeah.
One food you're going to eat for the rest of your life. You're never going to get tired of it.
I hate this question. Okay. I hate it so much. Because I feel like there's no right answer. I have commitment issues. You know, I don't know what to tell you. So, I don't know. I was thinking about this on whatever, pizza or a sandwich. I'd go, I don't know. I can't tell
you. Were you about to say go fuck yourself?
I was about to, but I was told to back off with all the shit. So, I'm assuming the fuck is also back.
No, that's fine. It's more just scatological. We're a food podcast.
Oh, so sex is okay.
As you know from eating with me, I'm very sensitive to those to those topics.
Which I do throw out every now and then when you're really being an asshole when we're eating.
Yeah, well, if you ever want to lose your appetite, go to Zhubin's Instagram and see him do some liposuction. And man, he does a great job, but you won't need liposuction because you're not going to want to eat for like months after watching it. So Desert Island Food is pizza. Yeah. Mine is pizza too, actually.
Yeah, I mean, lots of options, lots of styles of pizza. It never says, you know, is it Neapolitan? Yeah. Is it Chicago? Is it this?
New York?
Is it that? So, maybe that's a broad, nice option.
Someone very smart once said, a pig. He's like, what do you mean?
I
he's
love
like,
that.
Yeah, I can do everything with a pig. I can have charcuterie. I can have ribs. I can have prosciutto. I can have bacon. I like, it's pretty
and
smart.
And I mean, a pig kind of works well on a desert island, too.
Yeah, because like, you got a pet.
Yeah.
You know?
Pet, right? Breed them.
Yeah. Is there a food you can't stand eating?
Yeah, this is another one that I this is maybe one of my most anti-Danadute things. Liver. Can't
really?
Touch it. I can't touch it in its normal form. I can't touch it in its abused goose form. I just don't like liver.
Chicken liver?
No.
No.
Nothing.
Chicken liver is going to be the most, not even like a chicken. Smooth,
don't give me food Stradamus.
Smooth chicken liver pate?
Nothing. No, I don't like pate.
No, I'm not food Stradamusing you. I mean, look, the chicken liver mousse had its moment. It's over.
Yeah, CLM.
Yeah.
Those days.
CLM. Yeah, chicken livers matter. but I think, look, I'm okay with it and I'm not okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with it because it's obviously liver. It's a very challenging food. I'm not okay with it because you have an advanced palate. You're a man
What if you just don't like the taste? Because look, you know that I'll, it's not that, oh, it's the liver. It's right, I'll eat a gizzard, no problem. No. I just talked about venison heart, no problem.
No, you eat human fat.
Remember,
you have that video where you suck it out of a straw.
We have to take that down. It's weird.
YouTube.
They banned it.
Guidelines and not, yeah.
I don't like, it's funny, I don't like the ironness of it. I don't like the consistency in all of its forms. It's funny, a cooked one, a pateed one, it just doesn't work for me.
Has surgery made you not like certain foods? Like my friend Mo, who's an orthopedic surgeon, can't eat bone marrow.
No way.
He can't do it.
Oh my God, he's like, that's so funny.
He's like, I just can't do it. I hammer bones.
That's
I see the
ends.
He's like, I don't want to touch. I don't want anything to do with it. Do you have anything like that? That is
silicone.
Like, you can't eat silicone?
No, hate it. It's just, it repulses me. No.
What about like fat? Like fat?
No.
Like when the steak has like the large chunk of fat on it, you can
chew
on
it? You know, it's funny, side story, one of the best moments of my life, we went to a little pre-wedding dinner for one of my friends. He's an orthopedic surgeon. His brother's an orthopedic surgeon. His dad's a heart surgeon. I was in medical school at the time. And we had these big steaks, this big T-bone thing. And I remember very carefully cutting this steak and literally dissecting it off the bone. And the most exciting part of the night was when all of the guys there were like, wow, you really did a good job on that steak.
Oh my God, the pressure.
Oh, huge. Yeah. But no, I actually don't. I think maybe comedy here, the one thing that always happens though is anytime I'm wearing my scrubs and especially my clogs, my work shoes, and I go to a friend's house that has a dog, the dog immediately goes for my shoes.
Oh, yeah. Gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, that disgusts me.
Yeah.
You just have like...
It's just there. I mean, we wipe it off afterwards every time, but there's always little residual.
Oh my God, I want to vomit. And now we get to my favorite question.
There we go.
Everyone's favorite question. Something that you and I have probably... this, the thing that brought us here today.
That's right.
I was so disgusted by you disagreeing with my restaurant pet peeve. What is or what are your restaurant pet peeves?
Okay. It's funny. I feel like we talked about it so much already. But this actually goes back to the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that's going to ruin your experience or make it a less enjoyable experience for me gets me.
I need a detail.
I will give you details because I've definitely thought about these a lot in the past. The one that always really pissed me off was if the table is still eating, someone finished their meal, but there are other people who are still eating, and they come and take that person's plate. The person who finished their meal, they take the plate away.
Erica Rose, who was just on before you, same pet peeve.
There you go.
It's a great pet peeve.
The server deserves to be thrown out of the restaurant.
Off of the building, off the roof.
That may be
off the,
real reason why I'm on death row. So... It is an etiquette question because what is the rule there?
Okay, like, so,
I mean, for me, I hate it,
well,
but what's the rule?
There's three things at play here.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I think it's important to have a little bit of spatial, what's it called?
Awareness.
Doctors say that thing, of proprioception.
Uh-huh.
of your place in space. You need to know where everyone else is eating. Don't go too fast.
That's great. That's very
advanced.
Good point.
That's advanced.
That's a part of the dining community.
Yes.
And it's funny, I've never thought about that, but I feel like, especially with people that you know and whatever, you should be watching and yes. all at the same level. That's a very interesting point.
That's one thing.
Yeah. So number it's kind two, of a dick move of the person who ate fast.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. I won't ding them too much because I still think it's on the server.
Sure.
Number two is where you place your utensils when you're done eating.
Mm-hmm.
If you're placing everything at 2 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
that's a sign that you want that you were done.
I'm a 4 o'clock guy.
4 o'clock when you're done?
Yeah.
I think it's 2 o'clock.
I think it's 4 o'clock.
What?
Get us some info on that, please.
Hold on a second. We are going to Google. 4 o'clock.
See? You're a barbarian.
It says either
what
like...
What is this 6 o'clock
shit? It says either 6 or 4.
Uh-huh. Well, where's 2 o'clock, Dan?
Oh, my God.
Animal.
What is this? This is a
disgusting.
Dumb website. This is a stupid...
I'm embarrassed to be
stupid shit
to
website. No, I don't believe in that website. I'm going to go on a different website. Let's see. Table got India Times. Let's see what India Times says.
No, but it's on the other side of the world, so everything has to flip over.
That's right. There's a time change. So 4 o'clock is actually 8 o'clock.
Just definitely don't go to Australia because then it's going to be like
you put it under your plate.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think you're in for a lot of disappointment right now.
Oh my God,
guys, Dana Dude is a brute, uncultured.
Oh my God,
disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, it's too bad this episode's not going to air, Joop. Wow, this whole time I've been doing 2 o'clock and yelling at them when they take my food away. I'd like to apologize to the service community.
That's amazing.
Okay, so 4 o'clock, you put yourself. But I know that if you crisscross applesauce.
Oh, is that a no?
That means like I'm not done yet.
That's like put a little thing on your drink, napkin on your drink.
Yeah, a napkin on your drink, exactly.
Interesting.
So there's a little bit of that as well, but ultimately, yes,
yeah, but
servers.
Still, so I really do want to know, and I think I our service friends should chime in about what is then the instruction from restaurants, what is the etiquette from restaurants on how to manage that situation?
I think that restaurants are, not, I'd say 80% of them do it wrong. They tell them, just take it off when the person's done.
Yeah, fuck that.
I think that it's probably the most overlooked thing in restaurants is knowing when to take the plates.
Yeah. Off. But it's interesting. Your point also, I didn't think about it and I really like that of the group should be aware of their surroundings.
Yes.
I like that.
That's important.
So another really big one. And recently when we were having dinner in Tel Aviv, actually this really happened badly, is poor timing of the delivery of food.
Oh,
you know, and that's either making you wait inordinately long amounts of time or just like bringing everything immediately one after the other where you're done in 10 minutes. It makes me fucking crazy.
100%. I've gotten to the point where, and I'm curious what you think about this, where sometimes I just won't put the whole order in. I'll put in the appetizers.
But what do you
wait.
Do when these guys are like, well, you know, chef likes to course things out. Oh, also when people say chef.
Oof.
No.
One
I hate
of the fucking
that.
Worst.
I hate that. You know?
I was just at Rustic Canyon and the server and I were talking about that. I was like, when you guys deify your fucking chef by not saying the chef, you say chef.
Yeah.
Like it's fucking Cher.
It's the worst. It's like any profession that before the name of the person put some sort of a professional title. What assholes they are.
Yeah, imagine if your nurses, after you're done, was talking to the patient and they're like, surgeon says that you should keep ice on it. Surgeon thinks.
Or Dr. Gabe thinks, which, they do.
Wait a second. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, this took a turn.
I just shot myself in the foot. Anyway, they say chef wants you to order everything because he likes to course
Well, then
it
I
out.
Say to them, please make sure that it's coursed out with ample time.
I like that.
Because we're not in a huge rush.
Will you stop them as they're bringing things in and say, whoa, this is too fast? I've done that.
Have
I've started
you?
Doing. Yeah, because
I feel
listen,
like I should start doing that.
It takes. That's to me is like I'm channeling my inner Dana Dude.
Yeah,
I
probably do. I don't know. Or I'll say like, please don't fire up the next.
I actually think it should be our responsibility that when we get one dish too fast, we say, hey, we're here for a good time for a long time.
Yeah.
Just take your time here.
Yeah.
But and which is worse, when they bring it out too fast or when they make you wait forever? I actually think too fast hurts me more. Because at least when you're there forever, I mean, unless you're starving.
I mean, there are different rungs of Dante's Inferno. You know? Yeah. Not like it taking too long, the torture of like.
Yeah. Of, where is it?
You've lost where the pacing. You're not, you're kind of hungry. Uh-huh. You're not quite hungry anymore. Your body doesn't know what's going on. You and keep then looking back.
And you start looking at other people and they may be in the same circle of hell, but it doesn't matter. You think everyone's getting their food way faster than you.
My God.
You know, it becomes a vendetta of the restaurant against your one particular table.
Well, that's the thing. They start pitting you against the other diners. That's what they do. It turns into
it's literally Hunger Games.
It's Hunger Games?
It is Hunger Games.
It is Hunger Games because then you look like, why? Wait a second. They got here after us and they got their entree. Fuck those people. Meanwhile, they could be like the nicest people. They could run a fucking nonprofit or something. Mm. And suddenly I want
to. Doesn't matter. I want them dead.
Take my butter knife because I haven't gotten my steak knife yet. We're not even close to that. And I want to make fast work of the fucking NGO person. I hate that so much.
It's terrible.
But the too fast, I'm going to piggyback on the too fast.
Okay.
What about when it's too fast and there's a fucking, and you have a small table and there's no room on the table?
Oh, no, the worst.
Oh, and then they're looking at
me. They're like, what do you,
to move things?
You know, it's so funny because you always think there's something wrong with you. I swear to God,
like they're
I never
standing
thought
there
about
with
that.
Seven
yeah,
plates
like,
in their
oh
hands.
Oh my God, I'm an asshole. Like, let me Jenga here. Yeah. Let me do something.
Sorry,
here.
I don't think. Last I checked, I don't work here.
Yeah,
it's like at the TSA when they're like, you got to take your fucking stuff out, and now you have to stack the tray. I have to stack the tray. I'm a tray stacker now.
TSA, he's from Iran, but he's good. Don't worry about it.
Please Allah don't give Akbar. Him a hard time. Okay. Yeah. Funny, I didn't get approved for a TSA pre.
You won't anymore.
Anymore. Zubin, there's two types of guests on Green Eggs and Dance. There's the ones that pleasantly surprise me, and they're the ones that don't surprise me whatsoever. This didn't surprise me whatsoever. No, I knew we were going to have
so
the
it's
funnest.
Not going on air.
No, this is definitely not airing.
Okay, good.
But just for me and you, I knew this was going to be just catnip for me. It's my favorite kind of conversation. You're my favorite person to eat with. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Tell the people where they can find you.
I love you. Thank you. I'm Instagram at Gabay Plastic Surgery, TikTok at The Plastic Surgeon. And
how'd you get The Plastic Surgeon?
I had an in to TikTok years ago. They brought me into their corporate offices and they're like, here, take this. And then they were sad and disappointed with how little I did with it.
That's, and by the way, that's what his nurses say to the patients. The plastic surgeon thinks you should ice the area. That is amazing. I highly recommend, even if you're not into plastic surgery, you don't care about plastic surgery, Zubin puts out amazing content, and seeing these transformations are fucking mind-blowing. So I highly suggest following Zubin.
I had so much fun. I'm honored that you had me on this, and it was even better than I thought it could be.
Oh, come on. All right. Thank you, Zubin.